Good morning. You're on TalkBack.
Hey, good morning, guys. It's Sam Knott. So I heard the conversation about the budget and so forth and some of the things you guys were rolling around, and I just wanted to comment on those. The sewage water, putting phosphors into the river, I don't know if it's exactly the same thing chemically because I'm not a chemist or anything, but when I had reef tanks, phosphors just meant that extra nutrients were in the water and that that was... that would cause an algal bloom that would come and consume all the phosphors, and then those would go away. So, you know, it just seems odd to me that it's that we're spending $18 million to do something that, or well, that this the federal government's demanding.
A million here, a million there.
Right. But, you know, overall, though, I think this is another unintended consequence of monopolizing solid waste. And because it's been centralized and brought into one spot where everything is processed the same way, that we end up with these kinds of ultimatums. Whereas if it was handled in the market, we'd probably have a number of different ways. It would probably be done on a much smaller scale. I'm not sure exactly how they would come up with that. But you know, I think a lot of these problems that you guys talk about are a consequence of the government solution to begin with. And then I heard you guys talking about just the overall market, and I don't know if you guys realize kind of what's coming. I looked at some studies and things last night. There was one chart that was just incredibly telling that showed the number of ARM loan resets that are coming in the next 2 years. Mm-hmm. And it also showed the wave of the low... or basically the people with bad credit that got loans, that wave that caused the housing crash of 2007 and 2008. Mm-hmm. And the one that's coming in the next 2 years is four times that. The three out of four homes right now in America are undervalued by 75%. So if you have a $400,000 home that you owe that much on, the home may only be worth on average $300,000. And the higher, the larger the house, certainly the more the gap is. And there's another study out that shows that estimates about 5 million people are going to be thrown out of their homes in the next 2 years. And all of this we're talking about with inflation that's going to come in at $4,000, or I'm sorry, 14%. Now, when we look at the loans that are going to reset, the average payment is going to go up by $1,000 for most of these loans, based on the way that they're set up. And I don't know who can afford in this kind of environment another $12,000 a year to throw at the mortgage.
But isn't that what the government supposedly gave the banks all that money for, was so that they could help people whose loans were in trouble? And so far, I understand that they were supposed to do millions, and they've done 166,000.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's been a program that has not worked successfully.
So where's the
money? Because the banks are afraid that if they are not financially solvent, you got to remember, the FDIC just opened an office in Chicago that is, they're occupying seven floors, 100,000 square feet, and they're hiring 500 new employees just to deal with the bank foreclosures or bank closures and failures that are coming in the Midwest. So, again, they're expecting the real numbers kind of behind the scenes from inside sources are 2,000 to 2,500 banks are going to fail this year alone. So the banks have been getting this money, but they're afraid to spend it because they don't want to be the one that the FDIC comes in and shuts down. And, you know, they're also, the Fed's increasing commercial lending practices. You have to have a 75% collateralized loan, 50% in cash, and 25% in capital. So, I mean, they're restricting lending because the environment doesn't warrant it, and that's what happens when you throw this kind of stimulus money at things. Plus, we've got the federal government, the Treasury, the Fed is collateralizing 80% of the debt. So they're having the Fed give money to these banks who then turn around and with the agreement that the banks will then turn around and buy U.S. bonds. And that's monetizing the debt, which leads to almost immediate inflation. And if you're not careful, that leads directly to hyperinflation. This is what the Weimar Republic did in, you know, post-war Germany.
I haven't seen any signs out there of hyperinflation taking place. And while I realize the increase in the supply of money that has taken place in the past year is running a serious risk in this country of increased inflation. I don't think the discussion about hyperinflation is really warranted in what we see, and the degree of increased inflation. You talk about 14%. I would say 14% is what we had in the late 70s when Paul Volcker was head of the Fed. And it's a little troubling to find that Paul Volcker is back as one of the principal economic advisors of the current administration. But I don't think that there is any evidence out there at this point that type of inflation is facing us. I think we're probably going to see some increased inflation, but 14% or hyperinflation, I think, is highly unlikely.
Well, I would agree that we're not seeing signs today. I think definitely people are noticing when they go to the grocery store and buy groceries, the food and stuff, prices are going up. The food manufacturers are reducing the contents in the packages to keep the prices down. And certainly the Fed is worried about it because they just raised their overnight lending rates or something like that, because they need to start pulling that money back in, but as soon as they do, they're afraid it's going to crash the economy. And, you know, the shape that things are in today is far, far worse than it has ever been in any of the times that you can look back through history. And I wish I could share your optimism, but I don't think there's any way out of it.
It's not that I'm optimistic, because I think there are some serious issues with the economy. I think we've just gone through a period where deflation has been as much of a risk as inflation. I think the 8 million that are unemployed, I think, creates some serious problems. I think that some of the federal stimulus money has quite frankly been misdirected, and that rather than all the stimulus money, I would have preferred to have seen some tax relief for small businesses who hire additional employers. I think that would have been more beneficial to the economy, but you know, I'm just not sure that I want to run around saying that the sky is falling either, because I don't think it is.
Okay, I look at the bailout, or the, I went on recovery.gov or whatever and saw where all of these bailout funds went to right here in Keene, and I mean, there were millions of dollars given to the school, to Monadnock Community Services, to a lot of different agencies, $2.5 million to the airport, and all of these things. The bailouts aren't going to continue. I see the housing market collapsing. I see inflation really hitting, and I think we could have both inflation and deflation at the same time. That's where it's stagflation. It's the worst of all possibilities, where you have high unemployment, you have rising prices of goods, you have wages going down, and it's just kind of the worst of all outcomes, and that seems to be where we're facing now. I would agree we're not there today, but I think it's something that people should be aware of and certainly do some things to prepare for. And I think what's going to have to happen is not some new sales tax or new scheme to take people's money and reinvest it through government. And that's because, you know, every job that government creates, it costs the private sector two jobs, because they have to take that money out of the private sector, out of the hands of the business people who are actually earning a profit and creating value, creating capital, creating goods that people want to purchase, and putting it in the hands of the bureaucrats who redirect it in the way that they think is best. But, you know, they're not the ones actually creating the value that's going to eventually get us out of this mess.
Well, we've got another caller, but did you hear our response to your camera?
Oh, I did. I got an email. I'll go in next week. The guy is out of town, but he said they've gotten it to work somehow. He wants me to come in and look at it. It's not fixed. They said they would send it back to Panasonic. So if they do that and I get a working camera back, that would be great.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yep. Bye-bye. Good morning. You're on TalkBack.
Hey, Cynthia.
Hi.
I haven't called you for a long time.
Hi. Well, by golly, we should change that.
Well, I've got a lot of things I could talk about. So when I've talked too long, cut me off.
Okay.
First place, the guy that was just on, Sam, he was just making up statistics. They're just not true. Okay?
Yeah.
In terms of your program, I don't think that you should go out and find information for people who call in who could do it themselves and then have to, you know, talk about it again next week. That's not your job.
Well, we usually do it just for city stuff.
Well, I think you're being set up in a number of cases. And when I want to know something about City Hall, I call them up, and everybody is very, very cooperative.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I don't have to be a city councilor to get my questions answered.
Right.
And if they don't know the answer, they send me someplace else. Just think about that.
And you think sometimes people call just because they want to make it public?
I think they call because they want to make a point.
Right.
And we're talking about the Free Staters. You know, when they ask you all questions about people with guns and that sort of stuff, they can call City Hall just as well as you.
Right.
But everybody that calls is not a Free Stater.
Right.
And everybody that has questions about the operation of city government. I mean, Cynthia and I work in city government. You know, we've been on the city council, both of us, for quite a number of years, and we're very familiar both with the people and with the process. So I don't really object to people calling and asking questions about how city government operates or what city government can do. But I do have to say they're not all Free Staters. There are a lot of non-Free Staters.
Right.
There.
I can find out the same information. I think that they. I don't view the Free Staters when they call as being nice, peaceful, passive things. What they're doing, Cynthia, to you is they're trying to get you to say something you don't want to say. They're trying to manipulate you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you just should not respond to them. Except, you know, thank you for your opinion and, you know, move on.
Right.
I respect what you have to say, but not when you're kind of put in a box and... They're very good at that. And now to my last thing. The end of the program last week, Mr. I forget his name.
That was on with me?
No. Oh. The guy that calls in all the time. Mr. Bernard. Ian Bernard.
Oh, right. Yeah.
He said that he's not an anarchist because he believes in private property. And if he really does believe in this private property, somebody has to make a law that gives him the right to have private property. And that's called the government. And therefore, his whole argument is destroyed. You can't pick and choose which laws and which regulations you want to accept. You either have to be part of the community or not.
That's an excellent point.
He owns property in Keene, and how he would prove that he owns his property is he would go to the government, to the Hall of Records, the whoever does it.
Registry of Deeds.
Right, and get a government document that proves he had it. So he's really full of baloney. And if this idea of his, that you have to have consent, if I don't consent to his view of private property, and I build a tent on his front lawn, how would he get me off? He'd either call the police or resort to violence.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see where he has any other choice.
Right.
So his whole argument is kind of illogical. And I wish he would not call your program. If I want to hear his views, I will go on to listen to his own radio program. I think it's
ethical
for a person who's got his own program to dominate your program and get his sidekicks to call in and spend even more time.
Right.
I do believe he has the right to call. But I think he's not nice and not peaceful. He's passive-aggressive, and we ought to recognize that.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, thank you for calling. That's a whole talk for another day.
It is. We could do a whole show just on that role. And of government and private property, and the you don't have private property unless government is there to protect it.
357
as the Soviet Union discovered.
357-1290. Good morning, you're on TalkBack.
Boy, that's a grumpy Gus, huh?
Yeah.
Well.
Good morning. It's
good
Ian
morning.
With FreeKeen.com, and my name is Ian Freeman. I changed my name just so that guy knows. Anyway, I'm going to do my best not to put you guys in a box or try to trap you and whatever else it is that he thinks that that I'm trying to do. But I do want to address what he was saying there, the idea that well, in order to have private property, you have to have the agency of coercive force out there, a monopolistic agency of coercive force. And I am somebody who is peaceful. I don't agree with initiating aggression on peaceful people. And, yes, I do believe in property. And I think it's kind of an old paradigm for someone to say, well, we have to have government in order to have property. Well, why?
But what would you do if I came and set a tent up on your lawn?
Well, I think one of the things that we need to get to lay down here as a baseline for the discussion is to understand that in order to get to a truly voluntary society or a consent-based society, we're going to have a major paradigm shift amongst most of the population. So it's not like, you know, tomorrow morning we can just wake up and have everything be different. There has to be a shift. There has to be a new understanding from people to come to the conclusion that it's wrong to aggress against their neighbors in order to get them to behave in a certain way or to do something that they want them to do or to not do something they don't want them to do. And if we can't get to that point, I believe that we can. I think it's going to be an inevitable part of the human evolution that years down the road we'll look back and we'll look at government like we look at slavery today. We'll look it back and say, oh my gosh, what were we thinking? How could we have been treating our fellow man in this way? I think that's going to happen because it's the right thing to do. It's the moral thing to do to allow your neighbors to be free. So, but if we can't get to that point, if people aren't ready for that, then we're never going to even have the opportunity to try these things. And these things would involve competitive, you know, so essentially turning property over to the marketplace as far as, you know, you already have private things like title insurance and things like that. But, you know, as far as getting a piece of paper that defines property, well, you likely would have different sources for that kind of thing. And within the industry, they would come up with ways of working together with one another to ensure that everything was accurate and done in the appropriate fashion. And as far as people trespassing and doing other things to other people's property, again, it requires a belief in property. Property is a concept that's widely held by mankind, and for good reason, because people being able to own things helps protect them, and it helps things gel effectively. But if you're living in a society where people don't believe in property and they don't think property is valuable, then it's going to be real hard to protect your property because no one's going to care.
Well, so I think it sounds like a great idea, Ian, but it sounds like utopia, which would be perfect, but I don't think it's going to work. And we've got to break for some messages. But
It's real quick. It's not utopia because there are obviously going to be problems. And there are obviously going to be conflict. But that's why the marketplace, the point is the marketplace can solve these conflicts better than the government can because it's not one size fits all. You could have a market justice where competing arbitration firms are out there working to provide the best service to their clients and a reputation. You could have reputation rating where people are, you know, very concerned with how they behave because if they don't do the right thing and if they hurt other people or they damage property, they'll have to pay restitution. There's a lot to talk about here, and obviously I can't do it in 30 seconds. So I want to invite people to go to book.freekeen.com and learn more.
Okay. Thank you very much for calling.